The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the FSW owner, founder, creator, and at this point, politician after having to deal with all this stuff with the state of Nevada, Mr. Joe DeFalco. How you doing, Joe?
Doing all right. I was looking forward to our next guest, but he's a no-show.
Yeah. I think we can say Mr. Sal E. was...
I pushed for it. You know, I said, yeah. Hey, let's get Sal E. on.
Yeah, and... Sal E. is busy out there making his deals and getting his people in order and ready for action. So I guess we'll have to make it a day where Mr. Sal E. is not flying around on his private jet and cutting the huge checks for his guys. So.
Yeah, either that or he's over at Sprout Shopping right now as we speak.
He probably is. So we're going to do a little potpourri here for you today. And let's just talk about, for starters, you've had some birthday parties recently. A lot of birthdays the last couple of months been going down. And
yes, thankfully a lot of... FSW fans are excited about having their birthday party at the FSW facility, keeping us in business.
And, you know, when you have that kind of, limitations, when the state puts something in like this, in terms of the fan base and keeping them happy, what is it that you have to look at in terms of what you just said, keeping you in business, keeping the company going? Is it something that you just really have to think of and be creative and see what you can do to keep the fans engaged?
Well, it's difficult now because, as you see, there's very little going on. And the ones... who continually push content like The Unguided, they're really for getting their brand out, because the thing with them was they weren't really established yet. They had just a couple of matches, and we knew we were on the verge of something really good, and it's easy to get lost, fall by the wayside because there's nothing going on. But they've really increased their value by doing as much as they have done. And, there's more teams and more guys now that are starting to push things. And I had different conversations with different people, and our No Limits champion, for example, Ice Williams. And as much as Ice Williams likes to perform, he loves the opportunity to work, in a feud with somebody and getting, on Facebook, Twitter, and cutting promos and trying to make you invested in what Ice Williams is going to do next. And right now, everything is so random. It's like, he's missing out on his strong points. And, is quite disappointed because, he should be riding high right now. And, he probably should be in the middle or end of a feud with Funny Bone that looked like it was coming to fruition at our last event, which was the Mecca. And now it's 6 months later, and really, there's no movement, you know, in that situation. You know, when it came to training, Kenny King's at the school, so the Unguided, they decided to, you know, invade the FSW arena during Kenny's class. And, you know, for our fans who came to some of the birthday party stuff we did, most recently we had Vandegrift wrestled Shogun, no Kenny in the house. So, you know, Unguided took advantage of the numbers game. You know, we, you know, one thing we always knew about Kenny, in and out, you know, doing a lot of things. Ring of Honor just started, you know, taping the Pure tournament. Yeah. And, you know, so he's got a lot of other stuff, got engaged, you know, and I thought it was a scene from The Bachelor, but I guess it wasn't. I guess it was real life. But, you know, the thing is, it's trying to get things moving. And, you know, by opening the bars and 50% capacity, well, we're going to try to continue to do some private events. Yeah. And invite onlys to where our biggest fans get to come. We're going to do one this Saturday, and I feel a little more comfortable about it. You know, we're taking measures, you know, masks in, masks out. We space the seating, and we just have a limited amount of fans come out and have a good time. And so far, the fans have really taken to it. You know, we could probably fit a lot more. But we're just trying to stay busy, get people, you know, get the work in, you know, get the guys, get some of that rust out, because there's some of them who haven't really trained that much in the time. We have guys that, you know, because of the COVID, they're leery of getting back, you know, into this social area with people, to where they're trying to, you know, whether it's a family member that, you know, is at risk. You know, I've talked to a few people, you know, yeah. One of our trainees, you know, his wife has some, you know, has some issues. So he has to stay away because, you know, she can possibly catch it and it isn't good. Yeah. So, you know, we respect all that, but it just makes everything, you know, stay at a standstill. And it's just getting more and more ridiculous, you know. And, you know, I'm not pro this and I'm not pro that, but you want to scream about Trump's, you know, having his rally with all these people, but nothing was said about the it wasn't a rally. It was people on Labor Day hanging out on Fremont Street, thousands of people without a mask. And it makes me feel, hey, you know, the governor did everything he can to make sure the casinos stayed open, and anybody else, oh, well. And, you know, that's nobody's going to change my mind on my opinion of how that's going down. You know, he picks and chooses what he thinks we can do, or how many of us can go somewhere, but we can't go over there. And to me, it's kind of ridiculous. So, and I hate to go on a political rant, because I try to stay out of the pro-Trump, negative Trump, pro-Sisolak, negative Sisolak garbage that's going on. You know, it's just a political game, you know, between everybody. And, you know, we're the ones caught in the crossfire.
You know, that's something that is a very good point, that even just thinking about it, what astounds me is the fact that you know that the casinos, they're the ones who, you know, pushed it, of course, because this is the town's bread and butter. So let's do everything to keep them open. But the bars, we open and then close. Now we're reopening. We're not thinking of the small businesses per se, especially live entertainment like that. Would it even be, you know, it's just to me weird. It's like if you set up a bar in, like, the lobby of FSW, and you have, let's say, a liquor's license to sell alcohol, then you would be able to allow 100 people or so in there? I mean, I just don't understand what the parameters that are being laid out for these venues are, you know. Even I still was shocked that a place like Wildfire had to take out the bar seats, because technically that was a bar, but it was in a casino setting. It's just so confusing to me, man.
But then you could get a drink.
Yeah, from a waitress.
10 feet away. So yeah. I don't know what purpose it served.
Yeah.
So by having the bars closed, that means you had more people on the casino floor.
Right.
Technically.
Yeah.
So if you have 60 people and the bar's open, well, now you have 60 people and that whole area is closed. That means those 60 people are in a more confined area than if the bar was open. And, you know, the bars are back open. Wonderful. It's like, you know, I was at Sunset Station and I saw there was plexiglass between each machine. So they didn't close any machines. You know, I had, again, who knows what the real rules are. It's like, I thought it was supposed to be every other machine has to be turned off. I know at the Wildfire, it's every other machine.
Yeah.
Well, at Sunset, I was walking by to grab some food, and the football game was on, and I saw every single seat was taken.
Yeah.
But I guess it's okay if it's plexiglassed in. I have no idea. It's just like, it's just crazy how the rules are, how everything changes. You know, you can go to a restaurant, but you don't have to wear the mask as long as you wear it in.
Right.
But if you're on the casino floor gambling, you have to wear your mask. But if you're smoking a cigarette and you put the cigarette in your mouth the whole time, which I see people do now, now they never have to wear the mask and nobody says a word.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been an ultra confusing and sending different messages and stuff. And I think, you know, it's just, if you're going to do one thing, lay out everything. What the hell? Has it, time-wise now, have you been able to kind of look at and think about the direction of where certain things will be going? Has this at least given you time to, you know, think creatively, the potential of a TV deal coming up? Would, you know, is your mind rolling because you've had this time, instead of just sitting back and just, you know, twiddling your thumbs, like I'm sure some people have been doing?
Well, it is, but the problem is it's just like Groundhog Day. It's like you have these ideas and then it's like, oh, we're going to go to phase two and it says it's 50% capacity. Okay, well, we're going to run shows every week. Oh, wait, now we're going to go backwards and then there's still no live events and the wording of everything is weird. And now you go back into the Matrix cycle and it's like, okay, now we're going. All right, now we're going to do stuff. And it's like I've said, you know, just like in May and in June, and now we're in September, why is it going to be any different in November? It's still going to be there. It's good. Oh, with the presidential election, everything's going to open up. So it's like, wouldn't it be smart if Trump wants to be reelected for everything to open up now?
Yeah.
He would look like the good guy.
Yeah,
but then you want to blame the governors, and then, you know, Trump comes to Vegas and says, tell your governor to open up the state. And it's like, well, does that mean he doesn't have the power? It's like, you know, I have no idea. It's like nobody knows anything. Trump blames the governors. The governors blame Trump. If one's a Democrat and the other's Republican, they're going to vote against this. They're going to vote against that. Nobody really gives a shit about us.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, all I can look at is what I see. Now, people could tell me otherwise. You know, Trump passed a bill, you know, $300 a week for the unemployed people. Who's the last state Well, it's Nevada, of course. The one that he's closed down, you know, and there's more unemployment per capita than in any state.
Yeah.
Yet we're the last ones to be able to try to continue making a living. Like, most people would rather have gone back to work and work as a bartender.
Yeah.
You know, that extra 300 isn't going to do that much. But if you're not letting me work, can I at least get the extra 300?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because if you think about it in terms of, like you said, I mean, you would think the presidential authority, I would think, is like, you know, he was elected as a CEO. You know, you wanted to give a chance for a CEO. Well, at that point, how come you're pushing it off? That's like you as a wrestling promotion owner just pushing everything off and saying, well, you know what, that was my booker. It was my booker. He's making the decisions. You know, it's like, what? Don't you have the power? It's very confusing. But in talking about masks, FSW, you go to the website and you can get yourself some sweet FSW masks. If you haven't done it, please check it out because these are pretty cool.
Yeah, we got three different designs. So, you know, two for $25. So, you know, unfortunately, when you're, especially now, you know, the cost of buying the masks are a lot higher than they were a year ago, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But they're a necessity now, so hopefully...
Now the people who make masks are in a great position with new businesses where they're making tons of money, and then there's the people that thought they were in a great business,
yeah,
you know, in the live entertainment field that are sitting at home and, you know, just waiting, you know, impatiently for the call.
Have you, are you a big concert goer? Have you had any plans to see a concert that were cut off by this happening?
Yeah. When I grew up, I was a music director at my college radio station. So we got basically backstage passes, free tickets to like every hard rock, heavy metal, hair band ever. You know, I saw Metallica with Ozzy. I saw, you know, Bon Jovi with Rat. I even saw like Heart. Like, we just got free tickets. We'd get Twisted Sister and a little dive with Queensryche, who nobody even knew who they were. You know, with Adam Ant, Billy Idol. You know, everybody. You know, I saw Metallica three different times. You know, once opening for Ozzy, once headlining at the Felt Forum, which is a 1,000-seater inside Madison Square Garden, where I don't think I could hear anything for a week. You know? And I had a buddy who was like 13 years old. I was 19 at the time. And he came to the college radio station, and he lived locally, and he wanted to be a DJ. And the guy who ran the station, the station manager, told me to put him under my wing. So we were the guys. So he would always be, you know, 14, 15 years old, you know, sneaking into bars. Nobody cared, whatever. And we used to go to all the concerts and stuff. You know, fast forward, you know, we touched base a little bit over the years. He runs a string of nightclubs called Boogie Nights on the East Coast, mainly in Atlantic City and I think Biloxi. And he was working on a deal for a while in Vegas and finally got one over at Bally's. So he was working with the Caesars people. So he got us tickets to see Def Leppard at Planet Hollywood.
Oh,
and
man.
Shockingly, when I moved in here in 1991, so it was close to 30 years, I had never been to a concert since those days.
Wow.
And he got his tickets, went with the wife, and was like, I cannot believe I haven't gone to a concert in 30 years. Def Leppard was fucking phenomenal. So, Then we ended up seeing Raiding the Rock Vault, and then he came back in town because he was finalizing a deal, and he's actually got the Boogie Nights over at Bally's that was supposed to open in the end of March, and obviously that didn't happen. But in the meantime, you know, we went and saw Rod Stewart, and he ended up getting us tickets for Gwen Stefani, but we bought tickets for, like, the Poison show. We saw Kiss right before everything broke down.
Right, yeah.
But we had tickets that I finally got refunded from Ticketmaster for like five different shows: Volbeat, David Lee Roth, The Poison Show. And we were just getting into the swing of going back to tons of concerts. And it was like, nope, we're not letting you do it, Joe. Sorry.
Man, that sucks. That really sucks. I did concert security for a while, and Def Leppard was one of my favorite shows. They were so fucking good. And speaking of Gwen Stefani, too, I did No Doubt. It was like 2002. And it was at Long Beach at the arena there. And basically, it was a bunch of young girls in front. And I'm, you know, right behind the barrier, right in front of this stage. And I spent the night picking up 14-year-old girls, pulling them up over the barricade because they were getting crushed by the flow of the, you know, everyone on the floor. And it was crazy. And they were so good, though. And Gwen, at one point, puts her hand on my shoulder. And I'm just like, this is the coolest fucking thing. You know, I'm just standing here getting a concert and getting paid. I've got the lead singer of No Doubt, who's just one of the most beautiful women up close and in person, leaning on me to, you know, touch hands with fans and stuff. It just, sometimes those concert experiences, just like wrestling, it just, when that connection happens, you kind of go, okay, I'm a fucking fan for life now. So yeah, it's a shame to see that, you know, especially you guys getting back in the swing of things. That sucks.
Yeah, well, hopefully by 2022 we'll be rolling again.
You know, with memories and with wrestling, who was your favorite wrestler that got you kind of hooked on wrestling?
My favorite wrestler, I guess, had to be Bret the Hitman Hart. You know, I was a fan of him. The Hart Foundation was like my favorite tag team. Then at that time, they would like tease a little bit with him doing some single stuff. And I just thought he was awesome, you know. Yeah. And then when they turned him to where they brought in, where they basically all reunited, when it was Owen and Bulldog, and they brought in Pillman and brought back Anvil. And it was like the Evil Heart Foundation, and they were feuding with like Austin and all those other guys. You know, the Heart Foundation that they did up in Calgary against, it was like the Road Warriors, I think Shamrock, Goldust, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was like the craziest thing ever. And with Bret Hart, it was like, here was another guy who became pretty decent on the microphone. He was never great, but he was good enough.
Right.
But his, at that time, you didn't see guys because, you know, that was when they were gearing towards some of the smaller guys getting the title. And I remember, you know, back when I was a kid calling the hotline, you know, there used to be a hotline, not the Mean Gene one, but there'd be a different one. And in New York, and I remember calling, and all of a sudden it was like, Bret the Hitman Hart beats Ric Flair. It was like at some house show or something to become the heavyweight champion. I was like, holy crap. And, you know, I've been a wrestling fan probably since I was 7, 8 years old. You know, went to Madison Square Garden and saw Bruno Sammartino, you know. Never was a big fan. I was always the Stan Hansen fan.
Yeah.
And things like that. But Bret Hart by far was always my favorite wrestler. And I remember with my friend Dave, the one who has the Boogie Nights, we would go into the city all the time, whether it was a concert. We were always in New York, yet we lived like about 45 minutes, an hour out of the city. And we used to always go to the Hard Rock Cafe in New York City. One time there was a press conference for the wrestling album, and we got to meet Jimmy Hart and the Honky Tonk Man. And, you know, we did an interview with him. But I remember walking out of the Hard Rock one day, and all of a sudden a guy was getting out of a cab, and it was Bret Hart. And, you know, I wasn't 12. I was like 19 or 20, you know what I mean? And it was like, you know, walked over to him. Hey, big fan, blah, blah, blah. He had just wrestled like a singles match at like the Meadowlands. And he was very pleasant and cordial and talked with us for a few minutes and then went in. And then later on, I got to meet him again, you know, a few different times. I think once with Hosey at Power Play, I got him to sign my Nitro Grill hard hat that was initially signed by Hulk Hogan, Randy Macho Man Savage, Kevin Nash, and there might be one other. DDP might be on there, I'm not sure. But I figured, you know what? It'll make this this hard hat worth even more, and I got Bret Hart to sign it. So, so if anybody's interested, highest bidder.
You know, I've met Bret a couple times, and the one time though, which would have been the first time, I had a buddy who had some he was doing some work at NBC. And on the old, before 9/11, NBC was basically one of the worst guarded lots in California. And you could walk across this little grassy area that was kind of like a park. And basically, for like PAs and stuff like that, people who were there as production assistants who weren't full-time or anything, they got these little ID badges that weren't actually your face or anything. It was just the calendar for the year printed and Xeroxed, basically. It was the cheesiest, easiest way to get into something. So we'd go back there when wrestlers were on either... At that time, it was Howie Mandel's talk show was taping there, and then The Tonight Show was in the studio next to it. And we were planning on going to see Bret. And that was supposed to be that Monday when Owen died that Sunday night. And Bret was on the plane heading to California to make that Tonight Show appearance. And, you know, it was just, it was surreal to, you know, be one day on Saturday, you know, being so pumped. Hey, Monday, we're going to see Bret. This is great. And then Sunday night, just sitting there with our jaws dropped that, you know, Owen is dead. And, you know, it just, it's weird how things, you know, down the line, you get to meet him again. He's such a great guy. But I just hated the fact that, you know, we were so gung-ho and happy. And then you could just feel that tragedy. What happens in the sense of when you're running shows? And for you guys, if something goes wrong, and I know you guys haven't had anything majorly serious happen, but you as a promoter, as someone who's watching your product right then and there, you're on the microphone, you're calling the product, if something were to happen that was major, what are your steps? Because obviously when Owen died, it was just, hey, let's just go on with the show. And forever, everyone's been kind of second-guessing that and going, you know, that was the wrong thing to do. I mean, how do you handle something like that?
Well, it's really difficult because you got to understand, we're on a shoestring budget to begin with.
Yeah.
And, you know, the situation, accidents obviously can happen, you know, but almost all the independent companies that run are not in a position to have ambulances and medics. And, you know, there's a difference between UFC and WWE for a reason. You know, yeah. UFC, my job is to punch your fucking lights out.
Yeah.
Or kick you in the head and, you get knocked out and things can happen. In WWE, being choreographed entertainment, it's kind of like, you know, going to the ballet. Well, you know, what safeguards do you take for the one in a million accident that might happen? You know, and if something does happen, you know, I remember Nick Bugatti in training got whacked in the nose and broke his nose. Oof. You know, but a lot of the other stuff is nothing that's that major. I talked about the first show we ever did where the guy was in the battle royal and somebody jumped out to eliminate themselves to land on him, and yet they weren't even in a feud, but the guy cracked his skull on the back of the concrete. Well, you know, he started bleeding from his ears. You know, we called 911. The ambulance came. We did continue the show.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know how bad it was, and it was like, oh, you know, I bleed from my ears a lot. Like, oh, okay, I didn't know that was a normal thing, that people could bleed from their ears on numerous occasions. And I just remember that he was on, like, the side of the ring, and this might have been, like, the first or second show we ever did at the FSW Arena, the old one on Boulder Highway. And it was just like, you know, okay, he banged his head. We didn't think it was something that major, so we continued. You know, fortunately, over about the last year, one of the fans is a licensed doctor, and, you know, Usker. And he hit me up, and I'm like, here's another guy trying to get free tickets, you know. So it was, I think, one of the Meccas. He ended up buying a ticket. He introduced himself. Real nice guy. And then he offered his services free of charge. So generally he comes to every show that he's available to come to. He also comes to the school at least once a week. So anytime there's guys banged up, you know, he takes a look at them. He tries to fix them. And we are very fortunate that we have a guy, and I can't even say on our payroll, because he does it because he wants to.
Yeah.
And he understands. And, you know, I've helped him out in terms of when Impact came to town, they thought it'd be a good idea because I know they had some issues in the past. And, you know, we got him some nice paydays whenever Impact comes into town.
Sure.
So, you know, despite the fact that we're not in a position to pay the guy what he's worth, well, he loves wrestling. He likes to be a part of it, wants to help out. But when the opportunity is there, you know, he's obviously going to be the first person I'm going to mention to any of these other companies, like, hey, you need a doctor? We got a doctor on site for you, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so when there's been issues at the shows, sprained ankles, messed up elbow, you know, those are the issues that really, you know, occur.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really foresee in the near future, you know, people hanging from the top of a ceiling and jumping down. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure Samstown wouldn't allow us to do it anyway. But, you know, a guy can come crashing down off the ladder, it gets pushed wrong, whatever.
Sure.
You know, knock on wood, nothing like that ever happens, but it is definitely a possibility.
Is there, you know, my hardest thing when I was wrestling was the fact that, of course, like many of the people who are, you know, 20-something, I had no insurance, no coverage. So when I hurt myself, it was, you know, the old traditional, A, suck it up, and B, you know, rely on the home medicine, you know, and figuring out, you know, how can I tape so-and-so up? How can I, you know, can I take X amount of ibuprofen? You know, do I smoke weed to help relieve the pain? You know, all these different questions. Are the wrestlers today, a little more protected because they might have health coverage, and B, how do you go into a doctor's office and say, you know, hey, I've got this problem with my shoulder. How did you get it? do you say pro wrestling nowadays? Or, you know, is it something that medical field still look down upon as, you know, something that you're putting your own self in danger so they don't want to pay for it?
I don't know about that because I'm not a wrestler and not had to go to the doctor. I don't know if a lot of people have health insurance because guys that really want to be wrestlers, they generally can't keep a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
So a lot of times they might be in and out. They're trying to do part-time work because they want to be able to train. They want to be able to do stuff. So I know for facts that there's numerous guys of ours that have gone to the ER and they've had to, you know, pay out of their own pocket because they don't have insurance.
Yeah.
I personally don't think it matters. If I got insurance and I hurt my shoulder, what's the difference if I fell down the stairs or even differently, if I was playing baseball and I slid wrong in a pickup game, I'm okay. But if I was wrestling in practice and doing a pro wrestling match and hurt it, why would that be any different? That would be discrimination to me. If it was like I got insurance, but you're not gonna see me on my insurance tab because I pro wrestled, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's I'm hoping it's not as complicated as was 20 some odd years ago. What are you ramping up for coming up? I know that I've seen some buzz here about the vacant Nevada State Championship. Are we heading into a tournament, it looks like?
We are, because we're looking, and we've kind of made the decision that whether the local TV deal works out, that we're going to produce a one-hour television program. Yeah. You know, like the old days of Future Stars of Wrestling. So it's been 6 months. You know, at the time, Jarrell Nelson and Remy were like the top contenders for the Nevada State title. But for good television, the idea is let's do a tournament. That's a good way to kick off the thing. That's, you know, what we're looking to do. We're talking about the private event we're doing on Saturday, and we are going to have qualifying matches. We don't know how many we're going to have yet. So it might be basically there's 12 guys that are going to vie for 8 spots that we're going to film for the TV. And then it'll be 8 men. And, you know, doing an 8-person tournament is probably the first step. That'll be some of the main events. You know, I'm excited to announce, and I guess I could, you know, I might as well announce it now that, you know, Sean Daivari's back into the mix, and he is looking to wrestle again. So he may actually do an exhibition match this Saturday.
Excellent. That's great to hear. How far back does your relationship go with Sean?
Well, it goes back to the old wrestling school on Boulder Highway. So it has to be about 2010, 2011. I remember he hit me up. He had moved to Las Vegas. And he was like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And at that time, he was a pretty active wrestler. So, you know, we worked out a deal. And Sean was super cool about it. It was like, hey, I understand you have the school shows, and I understand you have the other shows. I'd like to work. You know, what can you do for the school shows, and what can you do for the Samstown shows? And we reached an agreement, and he was extremely generous by working for an extremely reasonable rate for us at the school to where it made sense to use him. And it was funny because he'd do a school show. We actually had him work Johnny the Bull and get involved with Remy Marcel at one of the Samstown events. But after that, you know, I remember him doing, you know, some matches, and we had him booked for a big match. I think it was with Remy. It was supposed to be at Samstown. And he hits me up, or he came down one day and he was like, "Hey, Joe, I got to let you know something. I got booked for an event in Europe, and it's like 5 days, and it was a few thousand dollars." And I was like, "Dude, we made the deal. You know, if you got a better gig and you're going to make more money, you're doing me the favor." And it's funny how he was actually like waiting for my okay to say, "Okay, yeah, go ahead, go make your few thousand dollars instead of working for some random hundreds here in Las Vegas," you know. And at that point, you know, I had a lot of respect for him, but now he really garnered my respect that, you know, he had a deal with us. He accepted the date, and he was willing to accept that date if I had an issue with it, which, of course, I never would. But he ended up having to leave. His father got ill, and I guess his dad ran a restaurant or something in Minnesota. So Sean left. And every once in a while, you know, I'd get a text, "Hey, what's up, blah, blah, blah." Still kept in touch a little bit. But then he decided he was going to open up a wrestling school with Mr. Kennedy and Molly Holly. And it was hilarious because he'd call me up and he'd ask me all these questions. And I'm like, "Hey, dude, why don't you just put me on your payroll as a consultant?" Because it was like everything about the wrestling stuff he was asking me. And again, I was more than happy to help. And then one time he came down and was trying to do some kind of joint thing here in Vegas. But that didn't come to fruition. And then all of a sudden it was like, "Hey, I'm back. I moved here, blah, blah, blah." And, you know, and then within no time, all of a sudden Impact had a taping and there's Daivari. I'm like, "What do you do?" And he was like, "Because he's friends with Sanjay Dutt, who at the time was like the number two or three guy in Impact."
Yeah.
So they were testing him out as an agent. And, you know, he did that weekend. He agented some matches. Then I had seen him at the school. He came in very infrequently at that time because he was pretty much done as a wrestler. You know, he thought he was moving on to the next thing. And then all of a sudden it was like he was hired as an agent for WWE. And it was like, great. We now got Sanjay and Daivari in the offices of WWE. We got D'Lo in the Impact office. We got Kenny with Ring of Honor. You know, we're definitely in good shape. And then when everything went down, he got furloughed.
Yeah.
And now for the last 2 weeks, I've seen Sean Daivari at training more than pretty much anybody else other than the Unguided and Lacey Ryan. Because, you know, I said, "Hey, but, you know, what's going on?" And he can get called back, but he's under the impression it's going to be a long time before they really do live events. You know, back then it was like you needed two sets of agents for Raw and SmackDown.
Right.
And, you know, they thinned the herd. They cut everything down because everything's over, you know, at the Performance Center, and now it's over at the Thunderdome. But Sean looks at it like, "I'm not going to sit here and wait and then hope they give me a call back. I might as well get back." And he has gotten in amazing shape. And, you know, we look forward to it. And, you know, I was talking with him a little bit yesterday, and he was like, "You want to do something Saturday?" I'm like, "Dude, it's up to you. I'll use you every single time we ever had an event." And, you know, right now we're looking at, you know, some guys. You know, I'm thinking a good match for Daivari is with a guy like Hyperstreak. You know, a veteran guy who really knows how to work. You know, had a fantastic match 8 years ago with Paul London, but his issues have never been that he wasn't an awesome worker. So I think it's a good way to get Daivari's feet wet because, you know, in my mind, I envision, you know, Daivari, you know, wrestling guys like Hammerstone or Graves, you know, or Sepha or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So having him there, and then we've had conversations, as I said, with Brian Pillman Jr., who was booked for the last Mecca event, canceled the day before. Some people were like, "Oh, see, he's bashing the COVID, and now he's afraid to go." It was like, no, he was actually flew to Mexico that Friday night to wrestle and felt like he might have gotten the flu, he got a little sick, and didn't want to chance it. So, you know, I already got his signing lined up over at Power Play Sports. So he's going to take care of us if we use him. So he's definitely another guy that, you know, would be a good match for Hammerstone or for the FSW champion Graves.
Yeah. You know, before everything went down, too, there was the great possibility, almost solid possibility that you were going to be able to run an all-women's show. Have you had talks about that again, or is that still kind of in a holding phase?
Actually, I had that conversation a couple days ago with MK. MK's a big fan, and he's actually going to come to Vegas in 2 or 3 weeks. We're going to sit down and, you know, possibly figure out a way to restart the Future Stars of Women's Wrestling and have it more of a partnership with MK, where he would be involved, you know, into the day-to-day operations. You know, here's a guy who by day he's an engineer. You know, I saw something on Facebook that made me laugh, but it was like, hey, here was the crane that MK designed for something in Vegas. And I'm like, wow, like he's big time in the engineering field, as well as probably the number one collector of Kiss memorabilia in the history of the world. You know, he goes on every Kiss cruise. I think Gene Simmons has MK's number on speed dial. You know, when I was in Laughlin to see Kiss, he was backstage, of course, because, you know, he can't just go there. He has to get the VIP experience. Now, I don't know if you've bought in the VIP experience 100 times, you get a free one. I don't know how that works, but I know he's paid tons of money. And I remember I found it really humorous, and I know it probably has no meaning whatsoever, but he sent me the sheet list of the songs, and it had the majority of songs, you know, I would expect to hear at a Kiss concert, you know, Heaven's on Fire and Detroit Rock City and all their greatest hits. And there was one song that wasn't on the list. And now I'm assuming it's the set list for the show. You don't really add things. And the only song that wasn't on the set list was Tears Are Falling. And that was the one in my head that I didn't see there. And I'm like, oh, man, this looks really good. It would have been really cool if they sang Tears Are Falling. And then all of a sudden, the fifth song in, they sang Tears Are Falling. So I'm thinking MK has some influence, and I've never had it verified, but Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley did Tears Are Falling just because I was in the audience.
Oh, man, that's great.
But going back to that, yeah, the idea, you know, MK is also my partner in the Mecha shows.
Right.
Because initially the Mecha shows were separate from FSW. Long story short, the FSW brand's what's there. The Mecha, Natural Born Killers, you know, the women's thing is kind of an offshoot. You know, it's similar like GCW doing, you know, Bloodsport and doing the different events that they do. You know, GCW is the main company, but all the other stuff are in conjunction with and is basically run by GCW.
Right.
And we feel with the talent base we got, with the MMA thing, with the women's stuff, that we're trying to do some different things, that it's given us more of an idea that in 2021, you know, maybe our strong fan base can become a little more national, to where, you know, we started with the Fight TV and we got people from different cities and states that are aware of the FSW product. And, you know, when we're running a Sam's Town event, when we're running a Mecha event, I'll put our talent up with anybody. When we run Mecha the day after Ring of Honor, nobody's going to be like, oh, Mecha's pretty good, but that Ring of Honor blows it away. No, it's, wow, that Mecha event is as good or maybe better than the Ring of Honor. You know, because they did lose a lot of guys. There's, you know, we love Ring of Honor. We deal with them, but with as a minimal of a budget that we've had, you know, we've able to find those needles in the haystacks of the from day one of the Brian Cages, the Eli Drakes, the Carl Fredericks, the Hammerstones, the Chris Bays, the Kevin Crosses, that, you know, most independent federations, promotions, schools, they're lucky to churn out one Kevin Cross in their lifetime if they're lucky.
Yeah.
You know, within a month, Kevin Cross and Chris Bay were both signed by major companies, along with a guy like Hammerstone, who is basically a local guy that has, you know, been with us forever. And when people talk about Hammerstone, even though he's from Arizona, he's an FSW guy. So, you know, we feel that we have that opportunity. And plus, so many guys, the Jeff Cobbs, the Willie Max, the Tom Lawlers, yeah. Sabu, Sin Bodhi, D'Lo Brown, Kenny King, you know, Daivari, they all live here in Vegas.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, Rob Van Dam. You know, how do you utilize?
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. And, you know, one of the questions I have for you that I never fully got the story, I don't think, on, is one guy you didn't mention, and that's the Godfather. How did you actually come about knowing the Godfather?
Well, I knew the Godfather from back in the days of the Buffalo Wrestling Federation, you know. But before that, the Godfather, Bear, as most people called him that knew him, he was a bartender at Cheetah's, okay? And there was a guy, when I was working downtown, a place called the Girls of Glitter Gulch, and there was a bartender by the name of Kenny Cole. Kenny Cole was like this big jack bodybuilder guy who used to be a bartender at Crazy Horse 2.
Okay.
He ended up going over to the Glitter Gulch. And I remember one time, I never talked to any of the guys, but they all knew Kenny because of the Godfather, and who the Godfather's best buddy was the Undertaker.
Right.
So at the WrestleMania at Caesar's Palace, I remember it was Marty Jannetty, it was Macho Man, and it was a couple of guys. They came into the bar, hung out for a little while, never really said much to him, probably the Godfather, and didn't really talk to him, blah, blah, blah. Then I may have talked to him at the Buffalo shows, because he used to hang out there if he wasn't doing the WWF shows. But then I remember one time the Godfather walked in, and right behind him was the Undertaker. And, you know, me being the huge wrestling fan that I am, you know, I obviously went over, started talking to The Undertaker. He was super cool. We were talking about the character. We were talking about WCW. We were talking about a lot of different things. And just through the wrestling thing, I had kind of knew of The Godfather, knew him a little bit. Hey, how are you? You know, there was a WWF event for the XFL. At Sam Boyd.
Oh, wow.
And to try to draw fans at one of the practices, they had the Dudley Boys and the Godfather there. And there was basically wrestling fans there, and nobody cared about football, you know.
Yeah.
And that was probably the longest conversation I ever had with them, because at the time I was doing, you know, my wrestling show. So that was kind of like the first interview. And then we did some stuff, and then he would come. Then he came down to the radio station, and, you know, did a live interview there, and it just continued. And then when we did the very first show at the Silver Nugget, actually the second show, because we had the Snookas on the first show,
right?
And I hit up the Godfather, and we got him to do a signing with Power Play and Scott, and he. You know, he did an angle. We had Kenny King as the interviewee for the Godfather. And, oh, no, I think the Godfather might have been on Disco's thing. It was the Lava okay. Lounge, and we had Disco and the Godfather for the first time ever, doing a promo inside the ring together.
Wow. when you make contacts like these, what is the most important thing that you bring to the table that allows the guys to feel comfortable enough to end up trusting you?
Well, it's pretty easy. Number one, you pay somebody what you promised them. Now, I was always said that I may not pay the best, but I've never shorted anybody. But there's plenty of times I've given a little extra. Sure. And I'm not really talking about the big, big name guys. But what I'm talking about is when I did use a guy like Lance Hoyt or Matt Hardy, those guys had it easy because most of the times I went to the airport and picked them up. There was never going to be an issue because somebody wasn't going to be there. You know, I got them their hotel room. You know, sometimes I remember with Chris Masters, Hoyt, you know, took him out to eat. Didn't need to. But, right. Hey, I like wrestling. He likes talking wrestling. I could talk with Lance Hoyt for 3 hours about wrestling, and we would sit and eat and, you know, over some dinner the night before the show. And it's like – but the other thing was you have to have some other value because, okay, here's my rate, $500, $1,000, $1,500, whatever it is. Now, in some cases, people are just in and out. They just want to collect their money and leave.
Yeah.
And then in other cases, the guys that you see come back more often is because we've gotten a relationship because of the fact that not only does Joe get them, say, their $1,000, but he also hooks them up with the local guy to do a card signing, for example.
Yeah.
You know? And by doing that, it isn't like I'm just using them for whatever I can get out of them. Like, hey, they're doing me a favor and they're looking for X amount of dollars, but by the end of the day, even though I paid them less, they made more money than they would have.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's not always about just the money. You know, Matt Hardy's a good guy. We talked. After the Mesquite thing, we ended up got a signing. Didn't help me. Didn't shave any money off mine because it was kind of a late thing. And then he got a relationship with Scott. So now when he got released from WWE – and he was about to show up in AEW, we had him booked 3 days before the event.
Yeah.
And then everything went down, and, you know, we talked on the phone, and, you know, funny story, Remy's backstage at a WWE event, and Matt Hardy walks up to him. Hey, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. How's Joe and everything at FSW? You know, and that's amazing to me because, you know, I grew up, hey, Kevin Nash on our very first, you know, Mesquite show. Guys you watched growing up as a huge wrestling fan. And like now Matt Hardy, John Morrison, I can call these guys up on the phone. And normally, like when John was working for us, you know, he would answer or he would text back pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and you learn to see which guys, you know, take that extra step. And those are the guys you want to deal with. You know, I have not worked with Brian Pillman at all. Heard he's a good guy. I ended up meeting him once when they did that show at the Nerd Bar with Teddy Hart.
Right. Yep.
And as I'm introducing myself, he was like, oh, yeah, FSW, man. I hear great things. I'd really love to work for you, blah, 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 blah. Now, in a lot of cases, some people are just like, oh, yeah, I'd love to work for you. You know, I get that all the time from some of our guys when they go out. Oh, we talked to this guy. He really wants to work for you. Hey, James Ellsworth, he really wants to work for you. It's like, yeah, because it's another payday for some of those guys. Like, we've talked with numerous people that have priced themselves out, but there's other guys like, okay, so that was my first conversation with Pillman. Then when we're doing the Mecca, hey, this is what we can do. Hey, what are you looking for? Hey, okay. Well, what if I gave you this, which is more than you're asking for me, but you need to go over there and do a signing for Scott and sign some pictures. Okay, sounds good. Then he can't make the show. Then he comes back with, hey, you know, just get me the flight, which we still already have, and, you know, I'll take care of you. And I could have got it and just been taken care of, but I still got him that booking back because now maybe he sees what I did for him. Maybe he does a little extra for us and he doesn't worry about it. It makes people want to do things because they don't look at me as just some other promoter.
Yeah.
I'm a lot nicer, and I'm not shady like a lot of them. So they know if they can get FSW on their docket two times a year or three times a year, that's easy money. They know they're getting paid. They know they're going to have a good turnout. They know they're going to have a good show. The promoter's not going to walk out because there's only 47 people there. You know, it's really difficult because in most cases, a wrestler who you never worked with, especially, they're going to expect a 50% deposit up front.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, the first person I ever paid a deposit for was Matt Sydal, but that was because I had to go through an agent.
Oh, okay.
And his agent was Bill Behrens.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay. So we had talked about AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. There was no cutting corners. It was half the money was up front. But every wrestler I dealt with, Drew McIntyre, Matt Hardy, Kevin Nash, because we got Kevin through Disco Inferno. So they felt he wasn't going to get beat. Didn't ask me for his money in advance. John Morrison. You know, all these guys have gotten word that Joe DeFalco is an upfront promoter, and he's not a guy who's ever going to beat us. So we don't need to worry about getting that deposit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, with so much shade that's out there, that's a golden lining. What draws you, like, when you find that you want to use someone like a Drew McIntyre, like, how did someone like him come about? Was it, did he find you guys? Did you find him? How does that come about?
99% of the times we find them. We were getting ready to do our IWF championship tournament. We had run two shows, and we felt now it was time to crown a champion. So we had already booked the Young Bucks. We had already booked Shane Strickland, Brian Cage, AR Fox, Rich Swann, Chris Hero, Matt Sydal, UHA Nation, now known as Apollo Crews, Sean Ricker, Joey Ryan. We had everybody pretty much booked, but we wanted a marquee name. So who do I go to? I go to Matt Hardy, of course, you know. So we're in about 2015, and I hit up Matt, but Matt was booked somewhere overseas or whatever. So I had let him know also that I was interested in Drew. And I personally didn't love Drew at all. I was like, here's the chosen one. He's been on 3MB television for off television, not winning a match for like a good year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, here's a guy. And I also know that Bill Behrens represents him. So I don't know him. So I would have to go through Bill Behrens and pay the top rate. So needless to say, talking with Matt Hardy, he calls up Drew, gives him my information, obviously tells him I'm a good dude, blah, 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 blah. So then Drew calls me up. And because of Matt, he had an asking price. I thought it was a little high. But I explained to Drew, hey, we're going to have a first-round match. You're going to go over in the first round, which he wrestled Tommaso Ciampa in the first round of the tournament. He wins the match. And as I said, I wasn't a huge fan of his coming in initially. Okay, we come in, we meet him. Seems like a super nice guy. The conversations on the phone are great. I'm like, going to try to chew him down a little bit. But it's like, I probably need him to work twice. So he's going over in the first round. Then it's going to be a four-way elimination match, so they don't work three times because then they're really going to want more money. So it's like, hey, and then we're going to do a four-way elimination. Chris Hero is going to be eliminated first. Then UHA Nation's eliminated. And then for the final two is going to be Brian Cage and Drew McIntyre. or Galloway, which we called them then. And right. I said, here, this is what we're looking to do, blah, 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 blah. And even though he told me his asking price beforehand, he didn't raise it. I didn't offer, say, hey, can you do it for less? I'm like, okay, we got a deal. He came in, cut promos, did everything that you could ask of somebody. And after the fact, I'm like, wow, this guy truly should have been the chosen one. And if I'm going to start a national company tomorrow, Drew McIntyre would be my first round draft pick. And as we were making plans to crown a champion for the Mecca, Drew was still not signed, and we were ready to start making inklings toward putting Drew in there and possibly become the Mecca Grand Champion. And then all of a sudden it was announced, because he was working Impact before that and things like that, which don't affect us, but it's a little easier because we deal with Impact all the time.
Right.
So, but then he left Impact and quickly signed back up with WWE. And, you know, we ended up not being able to utilize him again. But the one experience we had with him, you know, quickly placed him on my list of, you know, the top 5 or 10 guys that I will always appreciate for everything that they helped us do. And the funny thing was, dealing with the agent and being that Drew was one of his clients, I actually got questioned like, oh, what's Drew doing? Oh, he's working twice? Oh, you know, he really shouldn't be putting anybody over. It's like, it's okay, Bill. We got everything covered. You know, everything's set for the match. It's like, you know, now people, you know, can't lose. Then what's the sense? Like, oh, that was the problem. And again, probably it shouldn't have mattered with AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, but as independents, if they're going to wrestle for our championship, you know, the idea is having this great guy put over the champion.
Right.
And, you know, because we went back and forth a few times on AJ Styles. And, you know, that's probably the most disappointing get we never got.
Yeah.
You know, and that was more for the IWF stuff. He was long gone by the time we were doing the Mecca and stuff. And before that, the one person, which ended up being the tag team, that we never got, that we were dying to get, and finally through Conan we were able to put the deal together, was getting Pentagon and Phoenix.
Yeah.
And, you know, that ended up giving us a totally different fan base to go along with our regular one, and really helped out at the Mecca before with having those guys actually work two separate, one a triple threat match and one a singles. Just didn't have the right team for them to work in a tag.
You know, when you bring in, like you said, Pentagon and Phoenix bring in a little different audience, Do you think that the Lucha Libre style in itself is something, as a promoter, that you would potentially seek to do on a regular basis?
When Vampiro ran Lucha Underground and Conan with AAA, I've tried to pitch to them numerous times. And at one point, Vampiro was looking to do like a Lucha Underground tour. And I just felt the marketplace in Vegas, like I actually wanted to do a Lucha Libre type shows, but just not having the knowledge in the business, you know, dealing with the Mexican community, I couldn't reach out to them to where they would probably be interested. You know, I'm half Spanish, but I don't really speak the language. I don't know the culture.
Yeah.
Having a Vampiro at the time, having a Conan, I think they can breach that, because you put Conan on a Spanish radio station and says, hey, we're going to be at Sam's Town and we got Blue Demon and we got these guys. I guarantee you we would pack the place, and that wouldn't even be counting any FSW fans.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally
agree. And I believe that it is the biggest untapped market that is out here.
Yep.
You know, because we saw, it was like when Pentagon and Phoenix and LAX were an impact, there was a very, very limited Spanish crowd there.
Right.
You know, like it wasn't geared toward them, which I always thought was a big mistake. When we had Pentagon in Phoenix and years before, when Impact sent us Alberto Del Rio, we then flooded the swap meet with flyers over at Broad Acres, which is predominantly Spanish. We had one of our biggest turnouts ever at the Silverton, also with, you know, Alberto Del Rio posting all over Twitter about coming to Vegas, coming to Vegas, coming to Vegas. So, you know, moving forward, that's another, you know, venue. You know, Sin tapped into it a little bit, but things didn't really work out. We had one show that we ended up moving to the school that was slam packed, that we had Mil Muertes sit on it.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and we've had a couple other shows that did okay with like Sam Adonis and, you know, Juventude, but nothing's really been geared because it was, again, the ones at the show at the school has a couple of, you know, luchas that are famous, but it's a lot of, you know, American based FSW guys. And then they bring in a couple of like Cali guys like Little Cholo,
yeah,
and who have a good fan base, but it needs to be pure. You know, it needs to be 95%.
Yeah.
To where it's totally a Latin-based show. So, you know, that's definitely another thing to look at, because our goal is to kind of try to make that triangle of Las Vegas, Phoenix, SoCal, you know, maybe even Reno, you know,
yeah,
where we can do a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we can do a loop. But we can't do that loop if we're relying on somebody else to get our fan base.
Right.
You know, I can't go to Phoenix and hope that Phoenix Championship Wrestling can help promote it for us. We have to be able to go in there and have the right people in place, that it's almost like a gathering. Like when GCW, they built the Juggalo show. They built the Bloodsport show.
Right.
And they came to Vegas, and they were smart. They didn't really want to do Sam's Town because they weren't looking to do 800 people because they probably couldn't. So they rented out a smaller facility, and it was going to be Memorial Day weekend. So smart move. They were going to run after us because we were in contact with them, you know, trying to see about the ring, doing it at the FSW facility. And we were going to do the Mecca on that Friday night, and they were going to do it like a midnight show. So
yeah,
working with other companies, you know, kind of like what the NWA is doing. We have the Real Money Brothers, formerly known as the Bonus Boys. They're supposed to be on the NWA live show tonight.
Yeah.
They're wrestling. Next week, I know Remy Marcel is talking about possibly being there. We're going to have a pure FSW match in about 3 or 4 weeks where Lacey Ryan defends the FSW women's title against Maserati. We're also talking about, you know, the Unguided possibly on the show, and Death Proof and Ice Williams. So, you know, there's a lot of going on. And, you know, other than WWE, I think it's great that a lot of these companies can kind of join forces.
Yeah.
Because in Phoenix, Dom Vitale, Gallo, Hammerstone, Graves, they're kind of the clique down there. Dom runs the school with those guys.
Yep.
And they use a lot of FSW guys. Arizona Wrestling Federation uses a lot of FSW guys. So why can't we do something to get our brand out there by maybe doing FSW versus Phoenix Championship Wrestling? We tried doing that last year when we did the Limitless show,
right,
where we did a two-night tournament. Unfortunately, the promoter, you know, had things, you know, I don't even know the full story. It really got weird, you know. our guys didn't get paid till later. Then they claimed I was supposed to pay them. And I was like, yeah, that was never the deal. We did a two-night show. You know, Friday was at your place. Saturday was at my place. And, you know, you're paying the guys on Friday. I pay the guys on Saturday. Just like you're getting the gate from your venue on Friday, I'm getting the gate from my venue on Saturday. And the concept was great, but it doesn't help us if the company that you work with ends up not having a good reputation.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they had an okay reputation that became brutal by the time everything was said and done with those guys.
Man.
You know, so unfortunately, you know, that was a venture tried. Didn't cost us anything, but it also got hopefully some of our fans from SoCal, you know, they got to see Ice Williams there for the first time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it was a great tournament. Jake Atlas was, you know, eliminated in the first round by Chris Bay. And I'd love to read you the limit list because there's so many of those X Division, no limits type guys that are available. You know, we got a good relationship with the Rascals. You know, you couldn't go wrong using any two or all three of them.
Yeah.
You know, they wrestled out here. They had a really good match with the 1%. And they had one with, I think, the 1% and the Reno Scum.
Yeah.
So, you know, moving forward, we're just waiting for things to open up. We have the budget per se, but we don't have the budget to run that at the FSW arena. We need to open up the bigger venues to where we can bring in more people, and then it becomes cost effective to bring in those name guys again. Like, hey, Matt Hardy, I owe you one, he says. Well, we're not going to take advantage of it in running at a school show where you can only run 100 people.
Right. Right.
You know, but the question becomes, well, when is it open up? Well, half of the, or three quarters, or maybe all, I don't even know. But I know the ones we deal with, the entertainment departments in the hotel casino do not exist.
Yeah.
The staff at Samstown that we dealt with for 7 years, 8 years, is no longer employed by Samstown. Maybe Gary, the main guy, still is, but I have no knowledge that he is. You know, we still haven't even got our fucking settlement from the March show because nobody's there.
Man, that's
so
wow.
You know, and you know they owe us some money.
Sure,
it'd be nice to get it, but there's nobody there to talk to.
And when you first started the relationship with Samstown, did Boyd own it at that time still?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Boyd owned it. The lady Chrissy, who was in the was the head of the entertainment for Samstown, now it's one position for all of Boyd Gaming.
Yeah.
And Chrissy was friends with Kid Vegas's father, and Kid Vegas's dad told him about FSW, and she ended up checking out a couple shows at the school and saw a few hundred people there and was like, "Wow, that's pretty good for, you know, localized wrestling show and, you know, a little strip mall on Boulder Highway." So offered us the opportunity to go to Samstown free of charge. No drink or food guarantee. Just a way for another event to happen. And we did well, and we did pretty well, and we continued to do well. And then Chrissy was no longer there, and Gary took over everything. Who Gary I dealt with, you know, on numerous occasions there. That's when the, you know, drink guarantee, then it became, hey, we got to pay. And it became, hey, we got your Ring of Honor. Hey, we got your Impact. Why do we got to pay? And it's like, well, we don't really make a lot of money off you. And again, we can go back and forth. Do we get a good deal there? Yeah. Do I feel it should have been a better deal? Yeah. Moving forward, am I going to be happy with the deal that we currently have? Yeah, because I do understand, but I also feel that we've helped generate tons, and I don't mean a lot, I mean tons of business. You know, Real Water MMA went there because I told them who to talk to because they were doing shows at the Silverton. Yeah. You know, then, because of our events at Samstown, people saw what a good venue it was, and Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather and PPW, they all contacted Samstown, who had not run any sporting events there for 10 years.
Yeah.
Other than FSW. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, Ring of Honor, they did the Orleans. Why don't you come to Samstown? Even though it's still the same ownership, it was different people they had to deal with.
Right.
And when they did the ballroom at the Orleans, not only did they have to rent a giant ballroom that had nothing in it, now they had to go out and get the trussings and the lighting and the stage.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, talk to the Gary, because Gary didn't run everything at that point. Talk to Gary at Samstown. They negotiated a deal. Up until now, Ring of Honor's deal was west of wherever it is, Chicago, or the West Coast, Samstown's the exclusive venue. So that has value.
Right.
And I hear finally that deal is up, and the last time I heard that this past September when they were supposed to do the taping, one day at Ring of Honor was going to be in Vegas, and they were actually going to go to L.A. for the first time on the Saturday.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. That's crazy. I don't think most fans don't really think about that, and that's very interesting that, they hadn't run anything else because they've been so satisfied with Samstown and the results they were getting and the shows. That's the other thing too. And one thing I got to say, you know, when you guys run it or when they run it or Impact runs it on TV, it always looks good.
Oh no, there's no doubt. Ring of Honor's television, Impact, the video walls, the one thing we do lack, they are a tremendous, addition.
Yeah.
To everything, that we try to provide there. The thing is, the big mistake Ring of Honor made was they tried to do the Orleans Arena.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but they did less than they would have done at a Samstown show normally. Like, there was only a few hundred people there. And Okada was there. The Young Bucks were there. Cody was there. I don't know what it was, but they didn't draw shit.
Yeah.
They were doing seat fillers that they never do. There was tickets on, like, StubHub for, like, $5.
Yeah.
And then they went back to Samstown, and that was the turning point for us because the year before the Orleans Arena, they sold out both nights, legit right. Sellouts. And just 2 years later, FSW was outdrawing Ring of Honor in the same building. So,
yeah.
We really geared well because we stuck around. Ring of Honor fans became aware that there was going to be a really good night of wrestling on the third night. So yeah. We didn't need to go home Sunday afternoon. We were selling tickets inside Samstown's arena, for Ring of Honor, and that's because we were fortunate enough to be working with Ring of Honor. It made it a lot easier for us to hand out the flyers inside. Everybody in the front row, everybody, seated, was getting a flyer that had that showed Pentagon and Phoenix are on the show, or Matt Hardy's on the show, or, super indie guys like at the time, like Morrison and Brian Cage and, whoever, it was, Tommy Dreamer, different guys we used for the Mecca, the biggest names in wrestling, and the Willie Max and, Tom Lawler's or whoever it was. So all of a sudden, that third show was like, wow, it's an equivalent to Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Let's stick around.
And it's, it also seasons some of the talent that you have that are, training, or not even training, but came through the system.
All right. Kevin Cross, Chris Bay, and Hammerstone,
yeah.
Got marquee matches. Kevin Cross got John Morrison the first show he worked there on the Mecca. Hammerstone, we finally gave an opportunity, and he got to work Sammy Callahan and then later Moose at the Mecca.
Yeah.
to where, you know, I knew before anybody, you know, this guy's going to be a star. And then, you know, he got signed up.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, just talk a little bit about this Saturday and what's to be expected.
Well, this Saturday we are doing a invite-only event for our FSW fans. It's a private event, so you can't just walk up and get tickets. You need to, you know, hit me up on Facebook, the email, lvfuturestars@yahoo.com. You know, we're limiting, you know, the seating to 50% capacity. So we're probably talking about 75, 80 fans, you know, 30 or 40 are our regulars that will be there to begin with. So if you're interested, you know, we're going to have Sean Daivari back. He's going to be there. The Unguided, Death Proof, Remy Marcel. We're going to have a couple of matches that we're going to, you know, film for television that include, you know, the Nevada State title tournament, guys that are vying for spots, guys like Hiro Lu and Remy Marcel and Ricky Tenacious and Judah Matthew and, you know, Jarrell Nelson and, you know, a lot of our top guys.
Yeah.
So we have so many guys that instead of having eight, we're gonna start with 12 and end up with four qualifying matches to get down to the eight.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Final question. In the time that you've been operating FSW, what to you has been the, I guess, the glue that's kept FSW together? And I mean, obviously you've had some hard, you know, you're going through something like this with the pandemic. You sometimes you won't draw as much as you thought you would at a show. What is that thing that just keeps everything together?
Number one, my work ethic, that no matter what's going on, FSW has always been my number one priority when I had other jobs and everything else. It's like, I need to get to the school, whether it's just to make sure training's going okay. You know, I'm there all the time trying to figure things out. You know, when you say the glue is the talent.
Yeah.
Because what separates us, besides my work ethic, is the fact that no matter if we advertise the crowd or card or we don't advertise the card, people know that our show is the best wrestling show in town. And I don't like to say we compete with the other wrestling shows in town, because we really don't.
Right.
We're competing with a lot of other events. When we go to Sam's Town, if we draw 500 or 600, it's a little bit light, okay? You know, the other companies are just trying to get a fan base.
Yeah.
And I don't believe they're doing that good a job of it. And that's a whole different story. We work very hard. We've seen other shows come into town, for example, like Impact, that we work with. And we draw better than them because we have built this fan base and built FSW for 11 years. And even though the town is transient, so you can't rest on your laurels. It isn't like, hey, if you run a top indie fed in, say, New York opposite WWE and you're running a good place and you get 800 people, most people in New York are still going to be around and there's so many people to choose from.
Yeah.
In Vegas, there's so many people in and out and in and out that, you know, I know people who've moved back and forth four times in 5 years. So we're able to keep the fan base, but also grow it at the same time. And you know, that's a testament to the work of getting us at the Ring of Honor shows, getting us at the Impact shows, to where when stuff is being done by companies that are considered at a higher level than us, not necessarily a better wrestling show than us, but one that money is no object, Impact comes in here and they spend a shit ton of money. You know, those video walls to rent, you know, is probably more than it costs to rent out Sam's Town 8 times for the year. Yeah. Just for their video walls for the one weekend. So, you know, we have to cut corners. We have to work deals with people, because go to any independent show, there's going to be one or two guys that are pretty good indie guys, some that are kind of known elsewhere. You know, look at our show. Yeah. We got 10. We got 12. You know, we've had shows that had Graves, Hammerstone, Chris Bay, Kevin Cross, who are name guys, the Reno Scum.
Yeah.
You know, they've all been on the same show. And that's just localized talent that are name guys. And on the same show, we had Alberto Del Rio and Moose and Sammy Callahan and Willie Mack and Jeff Cobb. So the shows aren't cheap, but they know they're going to get a bang up show with great talent. Now, is it possible that Brian Cage and Kenny King have a shit match? Of course, absolutely. But, you know, more so than not, Brian Cage is going to have one of the best matches on a show.
Right.
But the majority of the audience didn't know. I'll go out on a limb and say nobody in Vegas knew who Brian Cage was until he showed up on FSW.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the glue is being able to have a good enough relationship and rapport with a lot of the guys. And if you're going to say what's the glue, it's going to be my relationships.
Yeah.
That I'm able to bring guys in and they're able to work a good price for us, make things possible to happen. You know, we got Brandon Gatson coming back on Saturday, wise guy, a guy out of Fresno, best of the West. Great shape, great worker, good dude, you know, dying to just get back to wrestle. You know, we still got Funny Bone we got to get back in the mix. There, TV, you know, is going to be as good as anything out there. Our production with a limited budget, you know, my son's gone out and bought shit tons of equipment. You know, we got cameras that are production quality cameras that we buy used, refurbished, whatever it is, that we try to keep everything in. You know, most of the money that comes in goes right back out.
Right.
Whenever there is extra money.
Right.
You know, we were closed for 3 months, still had to pay bills, and then before we reopened, got new lighting, new trussing, new monitors, changed up the arena, that my son's working on the entrance videos for the TV program. And in the past, 95% of the stuff would be shot from Sam's Town. And he had a couple of clips that he used by the entranceway of Hero Lou and the Unguided, that the lighting and the way it looks is tremendous, that you wouldn't know it's in that little TV studio area that we built.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much hard work being done, and it's different when you're doing something strictly for business. Everything in FSW is done because the love of wrestling.
Yeah.
My son does it. He makes a great living working for a YouTube guy on his own, and FSW is his passion. It's my passion. You know, the production guys, we get interns, we get other people, Mikey, who does a great job.
Yeah.
You know, he's not doing it for the money, you know, because he's definitely worth way more than he gets for what he does. But there's so much passion between the people and even the wrestlers, like the Remy Marcells and the Unguided and Cody's and you know, Chris Bays, and even the younger guys coming up, that, you know, it's hard to juggle so many people. You know, there's people that are unhappy where they feel they should be in bigger roles than they're in. But in most cases, people that poison the system that way, we really don't use. The other guys may not be happy about it, but they're going to work harder to try to get to where they feel they deserve to be. Because in most cases, the wrestlers are a little delusional, and you know, the mid-card guy thinks he should be in the main event. The low-card guy thinks he should be in the mid-card. And generally, guys are where they should be.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody under the radar that nobody's seeing, like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy's jobbing out every week. He's so great. No, there's too many people around to let that happen. You know, TJ, Tom Howard, Daivari, Sin Bodhi, Kenny King, Remy, Cody. You know, when a guy becomes good enough, we have, you know, three guys that have been training for a few months, and we got him in a battle royal recently. As a reward for being helpful, always being there, going above and beyond, cleaning the gym, you know, just taking those extra steps. Yeah. And the key is always trying to reward people. If you get rewarded for doing something good, you're gonna work harder. If you see a guy who's lazy, doesn't show up that much, gets in on a match, leaves before the show ends because he's in the match, even though he's a student and doesn't want to help out. Well, what gives you the motivation as the guy who works 10 times as hard as that guy, and that guy continually gets that position?
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, we make people know. It's like, hey, you need to earn everything you get. There's guys who've gotten big pushes early, and then when they've kind of dropped off and they've lost their positions, instead of standing up and taking the responsibility, it became Joe doesn't like me. Oh, there's this, there's that. It's like, how about you look in the mirror and say, you know what? I just ain't fucking good enough. I need to be better.
Yeah. I think that's a great note to end on, because I think that we all can be better if we look in the mirror and be honest with ourselves.
Right, the man in the mirror.
Yep. Oh, man. So anyone listening, if you are in the area, please hit up Joe, see if there's anything available for this Saturday. It's going to be a pretty damn solid time. And the arena is looking great from what I've seen on the pictures. It really is like a total 180. From, you know, what you were seeing before being a warehouse, now to be an arena. And the only limitations that, you know, you have right now are from the state and what they're expecting through the pandemic right now. But otherwise, FSW is really getting ready for that unleashing of, you know, the next level of TV, and hopefully, you know, some more live shows that hopefully can be packed a little better once the okay is given. Next week, we'll be having, looks like, a couple guests on. The Unguided seems to have wanted to take up an interview with Joe. So...
Joe. Wonderful.
Yeah, but just be ready for, you know, you might be there talking in your house, and one of them might pop up from behind, so.
Never know.
Yep.
You know, Damian Drake does know where I live.
Oh, man. So, you know, if you guys are not familiar with some of the guests that we bring on, I do encourage you to look them up online, check out YouTube, check out FSW on Fight TV and Twitch. You can see pretty much, you know, all the content you want to see you can find on those three sources, go to the FSW website. Again, if you're looking for a mask, please feel free to get a mask or get two masks for $25. It's worth it right now, knowing that you're going to have to be wearing masks for a while. So,
that's right. The rest of our lives.
Yeah. You know, it looks like that's where it's headed. So please, you know, support FSW any way you can, and keep listening to the show. We'll be back again next week. And in the meantime, download, subscribe, you know, watch, listen, you know, do as much as you can with the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Tell your friends and review us, because it's important to us that we're not doing this for us. We're doing this for you. We want you guys to listen and enjoy. And on the Defalcophiles, the truth is here. So remember, next week you get a little special treat of the Unguided, and who knows what might happen on that one, but we're looking forward to it. And Joe, thank you once again, and we'll see you guys next week.